And we are participating in a walkthrough of just a small portion of his July 2017 trip, just completed a month ago or so, to South America. Now, this is a family program, so we're going to have to skip the next picture, B1. I do not want any young people to be harmed in any way. So do not look at picture B1.
Yeah, I'm just saying goodbye to some friends there in Buenos Aires. I really like Buenos Aires.
I can't imagine why. Now, I want to thank you for the autographed picture of these people you sent me. Look at Cooper. He's dressed up like that's a Dickens-style hat and a mock Santa scarf. It's Santa. It was winter time down there.
Yeah.
And what is that, inside of a little mall kind of a thing?
No, it's out on a walking street.
I get it. It's a walking street, so those are street walkers.
No, actually, they're not. They were tango dancers.
Yeah, likely story.
They looked awfully cold. They were the only ones with so much.
Oh, you were trying. Ah, public servant. I get it. Trying to be the good international ambassador of goodwill. Warm up these poor, chilly girls who had not even enough money to
do it.
They couldn't even cover their legs. They were so poor.
I know. It's tragic.
Well, I see tragedy written all over you. I understand.
Yeah, I know. Don't I look sad?
I do.
This is just before I headed out to visit Lawrence DeMello. This is after I came back from Paraguay.
Uh-huh.
And so I went out to visit her, but like I say, I had to say goodbye to my friends there.
All right. Now, listen. There were other things in Paraguay which you heard and were told and so forth, which we can't talk about.
Right.
We're not going to discuss that.
Right.
And I just want to tell you, I can't wait till Jack sends you back again, because
yeah,
there's so much
February.
There. Yeah, there's so much there. Wow.
Yeah, we've only opened the door, not only Paraguay, but what I'm about to tell you next also, which is Argentina. So I went out to visit Lawrence DeMello. And in picture B2, made in China, these train cars are 4 years old, and look at the seats. That's a seat. That's one of the better seats.
No, that's a waterboarding table.
Could be. And
look at that. Wow.
Yeah. And then look at B3. There's pigeons walking through the damn train. And I got on at Buenos Aires, which was the beginning, and I rode the train for hour after hour after hour, and every stop, more and more people would get on, and there were always vendors walking through the train selling water or selling fruit juices or selling sandwiches. One guy was selling Rand McNally atlases. So,
well, and pigeon sandwiches.
Yeah. No, people would, drop a cookie on the floor or something and step on it. There were crumbs, so the pigeons were happily eating the crumbs.
That's all right.
It reminded me a lot of the bus ride in Romancing the Stone.
Don't remember it.
No, okay. Well, anyhow, hour after hour after hour, I rode this train, and I finally got out to where she lived and got off at some place, Santa something or another. Everything is Santa this, Santa that. Maybe it was Santa Polka, maybe Santa Claus, I don't know. And she met me there. We rode the bus for another bunch.
B4.
Huh?
B4. What is B4?
B4. Okay. We'll lead into the rest of these B questions here.
All right. I have not looked at photo B1. I'm not going there.
Well, I know. It'll melt your brain.
I forced myself to describe it, and then I had to get off
of
it.
Yeah.
All right.
It's worse than looking at a swastika. Your brain will melt.
That's right.
Anyhow, after I got situated in the guest house there at her ranch, a beautiful place.
Is that B4, her ranch?
No, not hardly.
I wouldn't think so.
So anyhow, the next day, we rode the bus again, village after village after village out there in Argentina, and it was turning evening, and we went to the grocery store in this little town. I don't even know what the name of it was, and she talked to some people there, and a few minutes later, this guy come in. He was probably about 35, 40 years old, I guess, and they were talking a bit. Then he had his friend come by with a car. He called it a taxi. You'd have to have quite an imagination to believe that was even a car. Anyhow, took us to visit two people, a lady and her son. She was probably, I'm guessing, late 70s, early 80s, and the son was probably 50 years or so. And we were talking about Gestapo Mueller. Okay, well, they knew Gestapo Mueller for the last 2 years of his life because they had moved there into this little dinky village.
This is in Argentina.
Before he died.
This is Argentina.
Yeah. So they talked for a while. You know, I don't speak Spanish, so I'm just looking lost. And finally, Lawrence said she wanted to go see the property where the house once stood and look it over. And the people said, "What do you mean now, where the house once stood? It's still standing, but the property has signs all over, you know, no pasar, which we know means Harry's welcome here."
Right.
By God, Lawrence went over the fence faster than I did. She's in pretty good shape for a woman. And let's not have all the calls and emails about sexism. She just went over the fence a hell of a lot faster than I did.
Right.
This was Mueller's home.
Heinrich Mueller.
Yep.
Wow.
And we took a ton of photos. These are only just a few select photos.
Mm-hmm.
All the orange trees that he planted. And we helped ourselves to some of the oranges.
In the winter?
Yeah. This is far enough
north
away from the snowstorm, I guess. I don't know. There was no snow. It was just cold.
Uh-huh.
Right now, when we were out there, I mean, I had a heavy sweater and a jacket on, and she was bundled up looking like Nanook of the North. And I was forbidden to show any of those photos because she didn't have her hair fixed right or whatever. You look at B7, that hole in the ground.
Okay, wait, I'm looking at the orange trees. Those are
okay.
Heinrich Mueller's orange trees.
Yeah, they planted them.
The head of the Gestapo for years. Wow. All right. Very good.
He planted those trees, we're told. And B7, that hole in the ground, that indentation, that's where he had a beehive. He had several beehives there, allegedly. And a lot of the, for whatever reason, a lot of the higher ups in the Third Reich raised bees.
That's where they hid the Nazi gold, Harry.
Well, he hit it real well. I didn't dig for it, but it didn't jump up and say, "Hey, take me home with you."
Who's going to go looking at a beehive for gold?
I guess you're right there. There's some kind of a natural deterrent there, all them bees.
Right.
So this was his house.
And B8 shows security steel over the windows, bars over the windows.
Yeah. And we also met with some friends of his who knew him for like 17 years. And they were just very nice people. And they opened up and told us a whole bunch of inner thoughts about Mueller, what a nice guy he was. They called him Don Mueller, which, you know, in Spanish, that's a term of respect, like Don Angel, Don Diego, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So,
Don Harry,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And somehow, I don't know how, but they got the idea that I was related to Mueller somehow.
You didn't.
Yeah, I can't imagine how that happened.
Distant cousin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The lady looked at me and told Lawrence she could see the family resemblance.
Well, I can, too. That's easy.
Yeah,
no problem.
Right. And especially since there's no German in me at all. I'm English-Irish. And then later I said something in German. I think I asked them if they could speak German, you know, sprechen Sie Deutsch. Oh, he even sounds like Don Mueller. So
this is, okay, this is in a little out-of-the-way area, right?
Oh, yeah, a million miles away from nothing.
Okay, and they got bars on the windows. Could you see inside?
Say again?
Could you see inside?
No, and we looked, and we couldn't see anything inside.
Were the drapes, or was there nothing left in there?
No, drapes. From what we're told, everything that he was in there when he died is still there. A relative of his comes by every couple of months to check on the place. So when I go back down there in February, we're planning a big asado. Asado is kind of like a social barbecue thing where you barbecue beef. You cook it. It's not like barbecue sauce. It's like you got an outdoor grill going, and then, oh, man, the beef is juicy if you got the right stuff, and it's really yummy. And, you know, you drink a lot of wine, and you have a lot of social gathering. So I'm going to have to learn how to speak Spanish pretty quick.
Looks like you've spoke it well enough for those two walkers of the street.
The tango dancers. No, actually, one of them spoke flawless English, and she has a degree in literature.
Mm-hmm. They all say that, Harry. And now this is amazing. This is Heinrich Mueller's house.
Yeah.
And where he lived in the last
Until
few years of his life.
Yep.
And here it is, another page of unknown history brought to you by Harry Cooper and Shark Hunters.
Not only dug out by Lawrence DeMello, she's the one who did all the legwork on this,
mm-hmm.
but also confirmed by his neighbors and his friends there. They knew him. I mean, 17 years these friends knew him. And one guy, and they must have been feeding him something, you know, I'm about 5'10", and I just come up to this guy's shoulder.
Huh. Well, the pictures in the house might tell a story. Might be a lot of things in there.
Yeah. There's more in the works about that, but I can't go any deeper into that.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah. It's quite a. It was like, oh, we were there. Oh, good 2 hours stomping around, taking pictures.
Uh-huh.
And, if the truth be known, maybe trying to see if the door was unlocked. It was locked. And the windows are barred. I guess they got a problem with people stealing.
Well, the nice thing is, you know, if you just happen to get into a place like that, you and Lawrence, you wouldn't take anything.
No, damn right we wouldn't take anything.
No way.
No, I take a lot of pictures, that's all. When I let myself into Hitler's estate down there in Bariloche
right.
In 2008, I never took a thing except pictures, a whole ton of pictures.
Those pictures are amazing, too.
Yeah, and when we let ourselves into the Hotel Vienna, same thing, take a ton of photos. Even I think we took some video in there too, but never touch anything.
Mm-hmm.
We're historians. We're not thieves or grave robbers.
Right.
Those are despicable people.
Yep. 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 All right. Next picture, B10. And we're not supposed to look at this, right?
Well, that's Lawrence.
Come on.
That's Lawrence DeMello.
Yeah.
And She's the one with the long hair. I'm the one with the short hair.
Oh, all right.
She fusses about having her picture shown.
No.
I got permission on this one, but she's a gorgeous woman.
Yeah, if you like women, you're certainly right about that.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, we don't know anymore about people in this country. Gender confusion,
well,
and God.
I'm not confused.
You don't look confused. Well, look at her. She looks like a former model and beautiful cheekbones and all that. And yeah,
she was.
Of course.
But we won't go into that.
I knew that. I'm not talking about it.
And that's Kenya. And believe me, if you don't know Kenya, you don't want to show up at her ranch. Kenya is not a friendly dog, unless she knows you. And she's big and she's powerful. She's about, I'm guessing, about 110, 120 pounds.
Right.
Powerful dog.
Speaks fluent German, too, right?
I don't know about that, but I doubt it, because Lawrence doesn't speak German.
Now, where are you? You're at a train station here, and you know, the strange thing about this picture, it almost looks black and white. Except for where except for Lawrence and your jeans, everything else looks shades of gray and black and white.
I don't know. She
how does that happen?
She sent that picture to me and told me that's the way I could use it.
But how can that happen?
I don't know.
Look behind you guys. There's nothing, no colors.
Everything's in shades of sepia.
Got a little bit of greeny in the ground between the rails, but anyway, nice picture.
Nice
Good job.
Picture.
Yeah.
So,
thank you for that, Lawrence. Thank you.
Oh yeah, she's a great lady, a hell of a fine researcher. I mean, she's a researcher.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, going down to C1 here.
You're in a hurry to get to the wrap up here, aren't you?
No. Tell me more.
Well, that picture was taken some years ago, obviously, because Franco's beard is dark, and the lady has been dead for some years. That's Nora Daisy.
All right, hold on. Nora Daisy is the nom de plume of the artist of picture number one. Daisy was treated by Christian as an indigent.
Yep.
Nora Daisy created that enormous photo album, scrapbook, which we're going to let you know how you can order. It has been translated into English. How much of the book do you think is represented in the version available to us, Harry? How much of the scrapbook? Half of it? Two-thirds of it? Has it been heavily edited? What do you think?
A huge amount of it is in there because that is what told the story.
Right.
What Nora Daisy put into the scrapbook.
And
all her writings, her drawings, her
life
stuff is in there.
She told her life story from a little girl onward.
Right. A little girl onward. From Jesus, we got one hell of a rainstorm going on here. Okay, yeah. So it from the time she was old enough to remember things.
Uh huh.
She was born 1938. So
she was 7 years old when Germany fell.
Mm-hmm.
And when she died.
She died. What the heck? 2006 or 2011, I can't remember which, but it's
I mean, wasn't she supposed to have died in 1945? that's the issue.
That's correct. She was supposed to have died in 1945, she and her five siblings.
But I saw the picture. I saw her dead on the ground. Sorry.
That's right.
We you also lose.
Saw pictures of dead Hitler, too, didn't we?
Yeah. Wow. Okay,
and
this
if you
is
look at
this,
the pictures this, yeah. of the six dead children.
Uh huh.
You look and you see that the arms and legs are badly misshapen and malnourished, almost like these were kids from the camps that were dressed up in the fancy clothes
and laid out.
To make one think that these six kids were dead in the bunker.
Now, how did Christian meet Nora Daisy?
She she, Nora Daisy, showed up, I guess, if I remember correctly what she said, at the clinic where mm-hmm. Christiane was working mm-hmm. For indigent people. And Nora Daisy was, they'd have had a field day doing an episode of Hoarders on her, except she wasn't living in a big fancy house like some of these hoarder people are. She was living in a dump.
In other words, she had a lot of things there that she had collected.
Yeah, junk. And uh-huh. she was living with a bunch of dogs and cats, and uh-huh. Pretty rough, pretty unpleasant. And Franco took her into his own apartment after they cleaned her up and everything, let her live there for a while. They've got really great hearts, Franco and Christiane. And then they found out who she was.
You know, this I've got a magnifying glass.
Okay.
And I'm looking at Nora's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very intense and deep.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking back in history there.
Yeah.
That's quite a gaze she has.
Yeah, that's true.
Wow. And when she passed, did they take care of her funeral and all? I imagine they probably did.
That's correct. She's buried in Brazil.
What? When did she die, approximately?
Either 2006 or 2011. I can't remember which. I think, you know, because they were down to see her in 2006, I think it was. They went mm-hmm. wandering around.
So she would have been close to 70 there if it was 2006 or 7. And
okay.
If it was 2011, she'd be mid-70s when she passed.
And okay, something like that.
When Harry reveals who this person, in fact, is in the picture, you'll be amazed. We're not going to do that yet. But I do want to remind you again, we are going to put up information how you can order the English version of that lady's memories of her life, the people, the places, the events, and all illustrated by hand.
Yeah. And the book was written by Franco and Christiane using all the stuff in Nora Daisy's scrapbook.
Mm-hmm.
That's a heavy scrapbook, man. I held it when I was there a year ago. That mm-hmm. sucker is heavy.
No, it's an amazing piece of history.
Yeah.
Again. So we can... I don't want to do this yet. We're going to take a break. Hold on.
I figured you were heading up for a commercial.
We're going to do that. I didn't do one the first hour because it's too important. But we're going to duck one in here and thank our sponsors who make this program possible and urge all of you, if you can, to support them because all of the products here are superb. No joke. And we'll come back and take a look at the little Irish guy with the green cap, whoever that is. One of your cousins, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who it is. All right, we're going to be right back in a couple minutes with Harry. So stay right there. Daisy. Did Franco describe why she would have chosen that name?
Not in our conversations. It might be in the book. I haven't had time to go through the book yet.
What's the matter with you?
I don't know. Just like I say, I'm wasting too much time working, sleeping.
Yeah, eating Entenmann's.
Great stuff.
Wow. Okay. Now... I'm going to find out. Hold on a second. I'm going to do something here. See if I can find that picture of all. There were how many children?
Six. There were a total of seven, because one was much older from a previous marriage.
Well, I'm looking at the picture, one of the pictures. It's sad. Sad. They're what a beautiful family.
Yeah.
I don't know which one. Yeah. All right. So, well, I guess we can kind of tell them who Nora Daisy was. It's up to you. This is your big show, unless you want to go to the little Irishman in the green hat first.
Well, we'll get to the little Irishman in the green hat in a moment, because he's the other parallel line of proof here. But this will give rise to that little weasel Englishman, Roger Clark, who sent an email to the host of my other radio show and said that I was devilish. And he said that I was a Nazi, which I'm not. And he said that my book was fraudulent, which it is not. So now he'll have more reason to froth at the mouth and
right.
wet his bed. That's Huldeen Goebbels. Nora Daisy is Huldeen Goebbels.
Now, if you look at the pictures of the dead Goebbels family, or is it Goebbels? Is Goebbels or Goebbels? How do you pronounce
Goebbels.
It? Goebbels.
Right, G-O-E-B-B-E-L-S.
Goebbels. It's got the little thing over the O, I think, or the E. Now,
no, this one was spelled out, G-O-E-B-B-E-L-S. It doesn't have an O mouth.
Okay. This, you look at the dead children. I see what you're saying. How they do look a little, kind of bruises on their legs, some of them.
Yeah, and malnourished.
Yeah. So,
like it's children taken out of the camps and dressed up.
Right.
So,
Joseph Goebbels was the, from very early on, in the early 1930s, 32, 33, something like that. He was working with Adolf Hitler and the others. Joseph Goebbels was a politician. He was also the Reich Minister of Propaganda of Germany from 1933 to 1945. Very big man.
Yep.
Still to this day, people always say, well, when they look at propaganda and mind control, they'll mention Goebbels often.
Yeah.
And say, wouldn't he love to have had this, or he'd be amazed. And what's amazing is when you look at his face, she's got his face.
Yeah, maybe.
A little wider, a little pudgier. But
there's very strong evidence that her father was actually Adolf Hitler, because Hitler was banging Magda Goebbels. Magda Goebbels was just infatuated all over with Hitler, and Goebbels had put in his diary, Joseph Goebbels put in his diary, that he was terrified, I think was the word he used, that Hitler was having sex with his wife.
This would have been in the mid to late 30s.
Yeah, she was born 1938.
Okay. Yeah.
And she wound up, I guess when they got to South America.
She went with Magda?
Yeah.
Okay, so both of them, the mother and one daughter at least, escaped.
Right. And I mentioned earlier that Dr. Carl Varnet was on the airplane with them escaping. And Dr. Carl Varnet was the Danish doctor who was experimenting with homosexuals by implanting monkey nuts in them to try to make them not be homosexuals. And he was apparently doing some kind of experimental work with Holdeen Nora Daisy.
Oh. That's quite a story.
Yeah.
The official story is that Goebbels poisoned his family.
Yeah. And then he and his wife also took poison, allegedly. So, now the parallel. Now, Christiane and Franco have so much evidence that this is absolutely correct. There's just no two ways about it. We were in the last show we did a week ago. We were at the farm where she and her mother lived for a couple of years after they got to South America. That's the one where Hannah Reich took her up in the plane, right, and she sketched out the farm from up above.
Yeah.
We also showed the photo of the guy who was head of the Nazi party in whatever the heck the name of that town was, that city. His name was Ernst Reinecke, and they lived at his house for a while after they came over to get situated. Franco and Christiane have done incredible research to back up everything they have said. Now, in a unique twist of fate, which makes it absolutely hardcore definite, the little Irish guy you're talking about with the green hat in picture C2,
mm-hmm,
yeah, obviously he's not Irish. He's using a fictitious name, so we'll just call him Michael. He was born, and we've talked about him before, he was born 1940, uh-huh, in Berlin. His father was a big shot in the German military.
Right.
So when the war ended, the father disappeared, took off, whatever, and his mother took Michael, and they went to their coffee plantation in Bolivia. Now, Michael's mother was good buddies with Magda Goebbels and also with Eva Braun. And when Hitler's dog Blondie had pups, Eva Braun gave one of the pups to Michael's mother.
Hmm.
So even though Magda Goebbels and Eva were not the best of buddies, Michael's mother was good friends with both of them. They got down to Bolivia, and Magda and Michael's mother renewed their friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael and Holdeen were just little kids at that time, but as they got older, teens, whatever, the two mothers were trying to get Holdeen and Michael romantically involved. And so Michael tells that whole story of his mother being down there with Magda and Holdeen being down there. It's exactly the same story that Franco and Christiane have come up with, but Michael never met Franco and Christiane. They didn't even know each other. They still don't know each other. They didn't even know of each other's existence until I told them. So they're telling their history that they found, Franco, mm-hmm, and Christiane.
Mm-hmm.
Michael is telling the story, the history as he remembers it, and it's exactly parallel.
Wow.
This is one of those priceless times in history where you've not only got first-person proof from Franco and Christiane, you've got first-person proof from Michael that says the same thing, and they didn't know each other at all.
And he never saw the book. Of course.
Right. He didn't even know the book existed until a mutual friend of ours, who probably shouldn't be named,
right,
first got the book that Franco and Christiane had written.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw the pictures in there. And she was showing the pictures to Michael. And Michael's nodding, oh, yeah, I remember. I was there. And there are a couple of pictures. He started getting teary-eyed.
Wow.
So this is no pat on the back for Cooper, no pat on the back for Shark Hunters. We're just letting your listeners know that the book is available. It's a damn good book, and it's hardcore fact. Franco and Christian proved it out, did all the legwork, and Michael.
He's in the States here.
Yep.
And he won't talk except for little bits and pieces.
Unfortunately, that's the case. He's got a whole trunk full of photos. And he's got a lot of information, but he's afraid. Afraid of what? He doesn't know, but he's afraid.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get him. Who's they? Everybody's dead from those years.
Well, don't take it with you, Michael, if you're listening.
Please don't die with secrets.
No, it doesn't do any good for history or the facts,
right.
Which is what. We're up against a huge machine that wants to corrupt history. They've been at it forever. They will not tell us the truth. And the only way that we can straighten the record out is through people like Harry and Michael, if you're listening. And thanks to Christian and Franco. Just amazing contributions. Great job.
Yeah, and Franco and Christian, they're such nice people. I get down there, it's like I'm family.
Well, it doesn't get any better than that. What a stunner. So Magda
and Holdeen
lived
out their lives down in South America, and they were pretty destitute after a while. And remember, Magda, I believe, was the heiress to the BMW fortune, or her former husband was, something like that.
Wow.
Then they died destitute.
Yeah. Right. So the book is available. The book is priceless. It's the validation by Michael is so amazing. I mean, as a journalist, as a researcher, just hearing about something like that is one of those once-in-a-lifetime things. Parallel courses, parallel lives, but at distance, and validation from both. Just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Michael is probably listening. I talked to our mutual friend, the lady, and she knows that I'm on. She's probably, I'm sure she's listening also. She should have Michael listening probably also. Because this is history that should not go to anybody's grave. It should be, it should be spread around because, you're old enough to remember, and I'm old enough to remember, we were taught Adolf Hitler started World War II because he wanted to kill all the Jews and be king of the world. And it's absolutely false. He had no intentions of being king of the world.
He wanted to rule the Western world with Britain. He wanted to share it.
Yeah, he wanted to put Europe together as a like right now it's the European Union. He wanted to pull Europe together as a union,
right,
and stave off the Bolsheviks, the communists.
He knew who the enemy was.
Yeah.
And what do we end up with? The Cold War and how many more millions of people dead?
Yeah. It's a sad situation, but we're headed towards another problem right now, I'm afraid, too. There's there's no doubt in my mind that there are certain forces or people or whatever that are working very hard to push the United States into a civil war.
There's zero doubt about it, and the primary name that we know about, now he certainly has others that we don't know about, is George Soros. Everybody knows this, Harry. It's all over the place on the internet if you do any reading at all, so it's not a big secret. Soros is involved with funding well over 150 groups by all accounts. And these groups are...
How come he doesn't send us any money?
Well, we're not subversive enough or seditious enough. So, but that's the story. And we are under right now, as a republic, the greatest threat that we have ever confronted since the original Civil War. And keep in mind how the powers that be have used the United Nations, and Obama in particular, for years and years, their refugee program, to bring in hundreds of thousands of Muslims, and now a lot of sub-Saharan black Africans, all of fighting age. Very few families have come over. It's 90 to 95% fighting age men. And there are actually a de facto army ready to be used in a civil insurrection here in this country.
I'm sorry I got you off on a tilt there.
No, it's the truth.
Yeah.
Same thing in Europe. 22% of Germany now is foreign-born, shall we say?
Yeah, and I read the other day where Germans are a minority in, I think it's Frankfurt.
Frankfurt.
Yeah. So yeah. Germans are a minority.
Yeah. And think that Germany is half the size of Texas, right?
That is. Yeah.
And it's a
and
tall.
I don't know how many people they have now, but I remember when I was a kid, there was not even 1 billion people in the world. Now there's 7-point-something billion.
Well, it went from 5 to 7.5 billion from, I think, 1950-something, in 35 years, let's put it that way. It jumped 2.5 billion people.
Yeah, it's kind of a snowball effect.
Yeah.
Even though China, for instance, they still, I believe they still have their policy where families are only allowed one child.
I think they gave it up.
Oh, did they?
I think so.
Well.
But it was a policy for years and years, yeah.
Right, and if you lived on a farm, though, you could have two children because you needed help on the farm, but they taxed the hell out of them, I guess, before. But now, I guess, if you say they relaxed that policy.
Yeah, I believe so. Goebbels, do we think that Magda and Holdeen got out and Joseph Goebbels didn't? Do we have any knowledge about that?
That we don't know about. So we don't have any track on him in South America at all.
Yeah, because there are pictures of a burned dead corpse that is supposedly Goebbels, but who could tell when a body's been barbecued? You can't tell.
Yeah, right. And the same thing with Hitler and Eva Braun. Oh, yeah, the dead bodies, except there are no dead bodies in the Kremlin or in the Red Army Museum or anything. So, you know, dead Hitler did not exist in Berlin. He died in South America. And Eva Braun, we're pretty certain, was still alive in 2002. She would have been 90 years old at that time, which is not impossible.
Not at all, no. And we think that both of them, if they were traditionally laid to rest and buried, are probably in South America.
Quite certain, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know anything about where Eva Braun ended up.
Right.
Buried or cremated, I don't know. Hitler, we have some thoughts.
Did anybody see her at any of the venues we've talked about in all of these programs we've done?
I've never heard anybody say they did. They've seen him.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen Mengele, Bormann,
mm-hmm.
Gestapo Mueller, but nobody has ever said they've seen Eva. And that wouldn't surprise me because this was a man's world back then. You know, women didn't get involved in stuff like that. Eva was not part of the political elite.
Right.
She was his mistress, then his wife, not somebody who was a policymaker or whatever.
Wow. Wow, what a story. Once again, Harry Cooper has presented history that has been heretofore unknown, amazing, and I want to check something here. If you keep looking under Harry's name, I'm going to post the link to that book. For some reason, it's not up there yet, but keep looking, and we will post the link to that book, composed and created as the scrapbook of Holdeen Goebbels, and you'll be able to buy the English translation of it.
The book by Franco and Christian.
That's it. Thank you, Franco. Thank you, Christian. And thank you, Lawrence, as always, for all your help, and just great. All right, Harry.
These people are hard workers. They're great researchers, and they're good friends, and the same goal, digging up history.
Doesn't get any better than that.
Right.
Okay, I am told that the link to the book is up there now. It's not showing here, but it'll be up there. Just keep watching for the next few minutes. We have a lot of interference, as you can imagine. There it is. It just finally showed up. It's the third section of text under Harry Cooper's name. It says Holdeen's huge book, available in English. All right. Anyway, there's a link right there, so click on it. It'll take you to Amazon.com, believe it or not, and you can get Christian and Franco's book in English. This is a big one. Big one. All right. Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon. Great job, as always.
Thank you much. My pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. All right. And that's Harry Cooper and history. And we'll be back.